the ninth parak of Bava Metzia, parak Tes Mishnah Aleph. The whole parak, most of the parak anyways, deals with the rights and responsibilities of a relationship between a landowner and the person who's working his field. So we've seen this idea before, but here's the parak about it. That when you, in the good old days, the rich people owned land and the poor people worked the land. That was a deal. And that was a deal all over the whole world. No different in Talmudic times. So the worker, the non-landed people, they had to make a living. They could strike a deal in a few different ways with the landowners. So in Hebrew, there are three ways really. The main way is either was a rhesus, which is called sharecropping in English, which means that it's a fixed split. So you'll get half and I get half, or you get a third, I get two thirds, whatever it is. And so the landowner doesn't work the field, he just owns it, but he so to speak rents it out to that sharecropper who agrees to work the field, and he lives there, and he shares a fixed share of the produce with the owner. That's certainly the most equitable way to go about things. Everyone is, so to speak, got their interests aligned, and everyone, has incentive to do their best to work it, and everyone shares fairly. That's a rhesus. There is another mode of setting up the deal, which is actually more risky and probably less fair, which is in English like tenant farming, which essentially means the tenant. In Hebrew, it's called chakirus, choker. A choker is someone who he essentially is renting the property for a fixed price, but since he has no money, he's going to pay in produce. So in other words, he has a rent every year if he has to deliver, 100 bushels of corn or whatever the product is, but that's set ahead of time. It doesn't matter how it produces. That, of course, is, a very, very risky proposition, because although obviously conceivably there could be a boon in extra produce, usually fields produce more or less a fixed amount unless something went wrong, not the other way around. It's rare that a field will produce more than it would be expected to, significantly more, because why should it? But obviously if there are bad things happen, like there's a blight or there's a storm or bad weather, whatever the story is, then that can destroy the crops. So obviously the choker, someone's on the hook for a fixed amount, is really at risk. But in any case, that's not our topic. We're not talking about the equity of the deal. We're just talking about that's the way it would be. So in other words, the choker says, I'm paying you 30 bushels of corn or wheat or whatever the story is, and that's that, with 10 barrels of wine. And that's his rent, and it doesn't matter. The owner doesn't care what goes on in the vineyard. I want my 10 barrels of wine, however much you can squeeze out the land, that's your problem, not mine. There's a third way, which doesn't really, it's true, it just doesn't play out so much, which is straight out rental, renting for cash as opposed to crops, and that's called schirus, renter, with like a socher, we've seen that earlier on in the Masechta. It doesn't really play itself out very much here, but the normal way, like I said, is a rhesus, which is the sharecropping. That was the normal way of doing things. The majority of the times, that's how people did it. And the Mishnayos here are going to deal with the relationship between the tenant, sharecropper, whoever he is, the renter, and the owner. The Mishnayos will apply to all three categories of tenants, except where, I'll call him a farmer, that's a better neutral word. The farmer, as opposed to the landowner, because I want a word that doesn't imply any of those particular kind of relationships. So it's the farmer and the landowner. I'm using those words now. So all these Mishnayos will apply to the farmer, whatever his relationship is with his landowner, his landlord, except where the Mishnah can't shoulder that explanation for obvious reasons. It'll become obvious sometimes it's talking about, a fixed amount or not a fixed amount, and therefore. Okay, so that's the basic background here. So the first Mishnah here is going to discuss the premise which exists all over in Ezekiel, we've seen before, that unless otherwise specified, the terms of our relationship in a business relationship are governed by what's normal. So if we didn't speak it out, then the normal rules of commerce in our particular locality, that's what apply. So the Mishnah says, Hamakabel sada mechavero. If a person, a farmer, takes a field from his friend, the friend here being the landowner, the mekabel being the farmer working it, So, and this would apply to anyone, a choker or a socher or a aris, doesn't matter, however he's doing it. Makam shenagu liktzor yiktzor. If the custom in that place is that the way in which the farmer should harvest the grain is with katsira, is with cutting it, like with a sickle or whatever, you know, the tool. Yeah, it's funny. I thought it was an air sign or something. So then yiktzor, that's the way he has to do it. But as opposed to la'akor, if the custom is to be oker is like is uprooting, like, you know, pulling it out with your hands, as opposed to cutting with a sickle, then ya'akor, he has to be oker it. The point is, there's two ways you can harvest crops, either with, you know, cutting it down or plucking out the ground. And whatever the custom is, that's the way in which you have to do it, meaning either party can demand that this is normal and for this locality, and therefore that's the way we're going to harvest it. What's the difference? So really there would be plus and minuses for each party, for each way. In other words, the upside, if you're from the farmer's perspective, he'd much rather, on the one hand, he would like to do katsira, because that's easy. Cutting it is easy. Pulling it out is a lot more hard work. On the other hand, of course, if you pluck it out, you get more of the chaff, like the stalk, and therefore you have more food to feed your animals. So he gets, you know, gets more value there. So he might prefer one or the other. From the landowner side of things, he might, on the one hand, prefer to do katsira, because that will leave the stubble left in the ground, which then will end up normally being natural fertilizer and make for much more long-term, you know, output of the field, you know, and taking sludge out of the field. On the other hand, of course, if they're splitting it, you know, whatever the ratio is, so he'll have more, in the short term, he'll have more food for his animals if he's getting a bigger piece of the stalk. So it doesn't matter, but the point is, since there's a normative way of doing things, either party can say to the other one, I insist you do it the way that's normally done, or insist I only have to do it the way it's normally done, even though either one might have a preference. It doesn't matter. Hakol, Hakol Kaminaga Medina, everything goes according... Oh, sorry, I skipped the words. Lachrosh Achrov Yachrosh. If the custom is that after the harvest is finished, the farmer, the normal thing is the farmer then goes and does Harisha. He plows over the field. So then he must do that also. Yachrosh, he must do that. The idea is... That's a lot of work, obviously. What it would do then, however, is it would kill the weeds that are remaining. And that would be good, as much as if you kill the weeds, then there will be fewer weeds growing next year. So it's good for long-term, you know, quality of the land. Obviously, weeds growing in a field, A, are a pain in the neck. B, make more debris in your food. But probably most important is C, it the field only can produce so much, you know, nutrients per year. So if you have weeds growing there, it's going to suck away from the produce of, you know, the, let's call it the quality of the grain. So in other words, it's a lot of work to have to, you know, plow a field at the end of the harvest. You have to plow it again. Remember, the plowing that you normally do is done after the rainy season. Sorry, after the summer, excuse me. Before the rainy season, the ground gets very hardened as it dries out over the course of the summer. So you want to plow it to soften the soil so you can plant seeds, you know, before the rainy season, get seeds in the ground. So that's not going to happen. Now we're talking about the harvest, which is happening before the summer, you know, whatever, or in the early parts of the summer. And it'll have to be replowed anyways later on. But if the custom is to do it, then you can force your farmer to do it, and that's that. Hakol Kaminaga Medina, whatever is normal, that's normal. Now, Kashem Shecholken B'Tvua, like a new thought. Just the same way, if their deal is, now, this part of the Mishnah, of course, must be referring to the arisus of sharing, because you'll see we're talking about how you share up the extra part, not just the food, but also the stalks. So, kashem shecholken b'tfua, the same way that the deal is they're splitting 50-50, let's say, whatever it is, the grain, so kach cholken b'tevin v'kash. They also have to share that same ratio, 50-50, let's say, of the tevin and the kash, the straw. Meaning that if it's a 50-50 split, the farmer also gets half of the straw, the part of the wheat that's not edible, and the will feed it to his animals or use it for making bricks, whatever the story is. And so too, the landowner will be entitled to 50% of it if that's the split, because he wants to feed his animals. As far as the actual words, tevin and kash, so they're two words. The mitzias, there's only one, you know, botanical thing we're talking about. In other words, it's you got a wheat stalk coming out of the ground. It's like a long, it's a grass, right? A long grass, and at the top of the grass, there's like this ear where the grain is. You can look outside now, the barley is growing. You can see on the hill right behind, right there, outside on Rephaim. You can look, if you look on the top of the hill, you can see this, like now the barley is at full length. You look at, like on the skyline, you'll see there's lots of stalks. That's the, those stalks are the grass we're talking about here. And then at the top of it, there's the little ear. You can notice there's like lots of like, what's really, you know, we call bran, or there's like little like hairs sticking out of it. You can see it on the hill now. It's still not gone, it's still yellow. It's still green. It's not gone yellow yet. In any case, so that stalk we're talking about, that's the tevin and kash. What's the difference? So Rashi learns that kash is the whole stalk, the whole long piece. They're long. They're like, you know, it's called 18 inches long or something like that. They're long. And then he says tevin is when you cut it, because if long stalk is not particularly functional, then you cut it into smaller pieces. You cut the kash into smaller pieces of tevin, which are used to make bricks or feed your animals. So there's no difference at all, just pre-cut and post-cut. That's how Rosh learns in Shabbos and Kufmem and also in Zvachim. Tosos learns that the difference is, and this is the translation you see in English often, that the kash is the tevin is the, I forgot how they translate this now. Straw, they call it. Tevin is the straw, exactly as I described. In other words, after you've finished doing your, what happens is you take the whole, you harvest that whole piece of grass, okay, and the top fits the ear, and it goes into a big pile, and you put it in the threshing floor, and then they run the heavy stones over it, pulled by the animals or by the person, and the heavy stones, they grind over the piece of, the stalk of grain, separate this kernels, the actual edible piece of wheat or whatever it is, from the chaff. And what's left behind is a mixture, and then you use winnowing, you use a pitchfork, you throw it in the air, and the wind blows the chaff away and the heavy grains fall, and you have two piles essentially. So the tevin's what's left behind. The chaff, the debris, which is used to feed animals, I don't know, to make hay for animals to sleep on, all that kind of business. So Tosos learns that's what's called, that's tevin. Tevin is left, the leftovers. Like Rashi we'll learn kash is really. But then Tosos says what's left in the ground is called kash. That means like the stubble. That's all they translate into, straw and stubble. What happens is if you're harvesting, you're cutting it, like mowing the lawn, so obviously you actually don't want to cut it. If you're using a sickle and you don't have an interest in having excess straw because you don't need it, you'll cut it quite high up. What do you want all this useless straw for? Unless you want it, you'll cut it lower down. But wherever you cut it, there's still a piece stuck to the ground. Like it looks like grass. So that is left behind, the stubble. That's, according to Tosfos, that's how most translate. That's the kash, that's that left in the ground. And that will just sit around, either useless, or you'll feed it your animals graze on it later on, or you'll let it act as fertilizer. In any case, so again, so Rashi learns that kash is a long stalk, and then tevins are just cut into pieces. And Tosfos learns that tevin is just the leftover stalks after you've done the threshing and winnowing, and the kash is what's left in the ground, the stubble. Okay, all that is left over for the farmer and the landowner in equal portions if they have a 50-50 or whatever it is, and they have a risa split. And same goes, kashem shechokin b'yayin, the same, if they have some split in terms of how they split the actual wine produced from the vineyard, you know, let's say it's one-third, two-thirds, kachokin b'zmuros uvakanim. They also, when they harvested the grapes, a lot of times they would actually take the zmuros, the vines with it. I don't actually understand why. I don't understand why they do that, unless maybe we saw this back in Peah. That's a long time ago. But we saw it in Peah that sometimes they would, it was easier for them. So I don't. Let's say that's Matzias here. Because, in my head, you obviously want your vines to, grapes grow from year to year off the same vines. You don't want to destroy your vines. That's crazy. But I guess the smaller vines, whatever, they found someone that's more, found it more convenient to take the whole piece. Or I don't know if it's just the. Remember, there's like a vine. It's like a branch of a tree. Essentially, they get hard, quite woody, and then there's like smaller pieces that come off the vine, the fancy word for that, I think it was tendrils, yeah, and then each one, exactly, tendrils, I think tendrils means like a young one of those, actually. I think the technical term was like peduncle, a little, but anyways, it doesn't matter. The point is like the, you know, when you buy grapes, in the shop. You don't buy them as individual grapes. You buy grapes attached to the sprig of grapes, whatever that thing is called. So maybe we're just talking about that. I'm not sure exactly. But whatever, the point is, whatever's left over after you've pressed your wine, you have that stuff left behind. That stuff would be good for making fires and stuff like that. So those are the smuros. Whatever you have left over, that's split 50-50, or whatever the ratio is between the owner and the farmer. Again, assuming we're talking about a chakira, an arisus relationship, where there's a split by ratio. He's a choker, he pays his fixed amount, and all other things that the field produces are his to keep. Uvakanim, same goes for kanim. Now, kanim are kanim means I don't have the word, but I'll tell you exactly what it is. When if you look at a grapevine or vineyard, so what happens is the Mishnah talks about something as roglios, which were grapevines that grew on the ground, just like trail on the ground. Then you had them as you see them today. You want the grapevine to be raised off the ground and then goes along wires, then it propagates much further and you get much longer vines and therefore much more grapes out of them. So to obviously posts, vertical posts, that's my translation now, for kanim. So you want to get these like vertical posts that will elevate the grapevine so it'll grow up and out. So what's with the posts if you want to keep them? So the same rule, well, the rule is they also split them. Ushneim mesapkin esakanim, because the two of them are also paying this. They're splitting the cost in a prorated way to buy for those posts year after year, whatever need would be. So the way the Bartanura learns, that's what we're going to learn here, is that we're assuming that they're splitting it, if it's a 50-50 split in terms of produce, we're splitting the cost of buying posts every year 50-50. And that being the case, half it's mine, half it's yours. So how the Bartanura learns then means, obviously, if the deal is that the landowner is arranging to cover the cost of the posts, really he would own all of them. So even though the Mishnah says they split it in a prorated way, that's because we're assuming they're splitting the cost in a prorated way. But if they're not, then they're not. So that whoever paid for it, he gets to keep it. That would make the kanim different than the zmuros. The branches are part of the produce, and if we're splitting all the produce 50-50, that would include doesn't have anything to do with who pays for what. That's how you split it 50-50, like grapes, like fine, same thing. Okay, tov. So that's that.